the other 49 states, as far as I know, I haven't done the research on all of them, but like pretty much the world over, when you say you're going to go out and buy a house, you're not actually going out to buy a house. You're going out to buy land. You're buying land that just happens to have a structure on it, right? That somebody built at some time. But the land's been there forever. And that is what you're buying in a real estate transaction. I mean, that's crazy, right? But that's legally, that's where it all starts. And that's where we want to start. Welcome to Service and Wealth, the podcast dedicated to helping military personnel master their finances and achieve financial freedom. Our mission is to guide you through the ins and outs of planning, saving, and investing. And most importantly, how to balance savings so you can enjoy life now and retire with confidence. Let's go. All right. I personally have been waiting for like 6 months to do this topic, to start talking about this topic. And from the earliest readers of the blog and the first round of customers who purchased the Service and Wealth book, it's been the same request. And it has, it has a huge impact on everyone in the military and also every veteran. It's a topic that is probably the cornerstone of the American dream. It's something that is a hugely intimidating topic and also like equally hugely liberating and rewarding topic. And it's probably not the most talked about subject in finance and personal finance and money management and all that kind of stuff in the military. But it's for sure like in the top three. It might be number two. I wish we had a way to, do some non-obnoxious surveys of people and like what they're interested in and things like that, because, you can send out survey monkeys or like emails, but that's really hard to get people to want to respond to those kind of things. But it would be really obviously helpful and whenever you're trying to like, create some sort of education, education company or like series of interesting podcasts and blogs or write books that people really want to know about. Obviously having the actual, surveys of what people are interested in, you can really tailor it. And so I do have one survey that's available at my fingertips, and this topic doesn't really come up, but this survey was of, midshipmen at the Naval Academy and things that they were interested in. And obviously if you're not yet in active duty, you're still kind of like trying out to make sure that you can make the team, and you're not quite eligible for this thing, then it wouldn't quite, might not quite register on the top of your interest list when it comes to topics in finance. And yet it was still number three, right? So even for, these basically college students who are, at this point, they're still trying to like figure out like, how do I get my first car? This topic still registered as number three, and it was ahead of car buying, right? It was behind stock market investing and what to do with the career starter loan, which for those of you who are not familiar, because you're not part of like an ROTC program or a service academy, the career starter loan is offered by USAA and Navy Federal. And depending on which one you go to, it's either $32,000 or $36,000. The interest rate is right around 1%. It's like 0.75, 1%. So it's almost free money in terms of the interest on it. But it's a five-year loan. It's cash advance, basically. And in order to get it, you have to sign a contract that instead of and forgive me if I get this a little bit muddled because there's a lot of different a lot of different contracts and agreements and paybacks and all that stuff. But I think it's like normally you come in and do 4 years, but if you say you'll do 5 years, then you can get this loan because it's got a 5-year repayment term. And, you know, obviously, like, if you stop repaying while you're in the military, USAA or Navy Fed just has to call over to your local command and say, hey, so-and-so stopped paying back this loan. And then they just garnish your wages, right? So, like, your base pay all of a sudden is now, instead of being $2,000, now it's $1,400. And there's a little line on there that says, like, this is the $600 that we sent to USAA on your behalf so you can pay off this loan. Figure it out, right? But anyway, the number three topic for midshipmen, and what I my informal, totally like casual and like not scientific sense from the broader military, active duty in uniform, is probably the number two topic of interest. Can you guess what it is? Drum roll. Real estate and the VA loan, right? Home buying. Hugely interesting, hugely intimidating, hugely rewarding. Like, it's a major thing. You probably heard plenty of folks out there who talk about real estate in terms of the biggest purchase you'll make in your life, or the most important investment you'll make in your life. And, you know, I disagree, right? I think that's not ambitious enough, right? If, like, buying a $400,000 home and having to save, let's say you were just doing conventional route, saving 20% and putting $80,000 down. If that was the biggest financial decision and the hardest thing, and like, what have you been signing up for? Like, that's, you can do that in a few years, right? The biggest financial decision, the biggest investment in your life should be something that takes decades, you know, from the time you're 20 to your 50th birthday, to make yourself a multimillionaire and financially free and create a legacy for your family, right? Like, that is huge. Buying a house, it's not that big a deal, right? But it is intimidating, especially your first time. It never gets easy because it's quite complicated. But what we're going to do this week is we're going to kick off what I envision, and I think I alluded to it last time. What I envision is like a 4-part series. Maybe it'll go 5, but what we got to do is we got to do crawl, walk, run, then like sprint, then like sweep the leg, karate kid, black belt, master, right? Like, we've got to start out with the basics, and so that instead of just being basic, we can be brilliant. So we're going to start out with the basics and we're going to build up. And before we get started, I'll just take a quick moment to, you know, say, if you go to Amazon, you can get it on Kindle, or you can order a paperback, and Kindle Direct Publishing will send you a paperback copy directly to your mailing address. Is pick up our Service and Wealth book. It's our first book. And in there, we talk about the impacts of investing in real estate on wealth generation, on income, on lifetime financial, you know, independence or financial freedom. We talk about how significant real estate is in the journey of over 80% of America's millionaires. And we talk about some of the habits of the wealthy that relate to taking care of and investing in their properties to keep them going. So while we don't directly attack real estate there, you know, we do give you some of those sort of like healthy habits. And with that book, it's a set of 10 money habits that are pulled directly from America's wealthy and most financially successful people and families. Like, these are the things that they all do. And if you want to achieve great things financially for yourself and your future and your family, why not start by just emulating, copying, borrowing from these 10 habits, all of which are really easy to start doing. Not all at the same time. You don't have to. Like, it's not like you must do steps 1 through 10 right now. You just start adding 1 or 2 or 3 or 4, or all of them. You know, and these podcasts will be a bridge to, we've already got like the outline and like some of the draft on it, but we're going to update what's available out there in terms of how the VA loan works and like you know, right now there's a few books out there that you can find on Amazon about like buying a home with a VA loan, right? And they talk about a lot of like sort of the plain vanilla stuff, but there's not really anything out there that puts together how you can use a VA loan for a lifetime strategy to get deeply discounted real estate throughout your life, right? Like if you are in the military, remember the VA loan is from the Veterans Affairs, Department of Veterans Affairs, but it's for everyone from the moment you go on active duty and like are like, you know, vetted into the program, which means like if you join up at 19 or you commission at age 22, before you're 25, you should be a homeowner and should have been able to do it sensibly and cheaply. And then every 1 or 2 or 3 years, you know, probably at first, like every 3 years, but then eventually every 2 years. And then every year, you know, family life depending and all that other complicated stuff, you could be adding a home with very little money down using the VA loan, right? And compare that to somebody who's got to either save up the cash or raise investment funds from others to put 20% down, 10% down, 15%, 25% down, right? Like it's, you can fast track your way. It's like, it's almost like a cheat code. So that's why I'm excited about it. That's why I want to go into it, but I don't want to go into it right away, right? We're not going to hit the VA loan right out the gates because we've got to just understand exactly what we're doing when it comes to home buying and real estate transactions. And the VA loan is just a weapon that you're going to use. It's not, VA loan is not how to buy a house. It's not real estate. It's not real estate investing. It's just a weapon that you get to use, that you've been given because you decided to join the military. And if you want to use a weapon, you've got to know its characteristics, right? You've got to know the firing mechanism, the safety, the optics or targeting system. You've got to know the different kinds of ammunition that goes into it. You've got to know the whole system, the whole weapon platform, as it were. You know, like it's like a, as I've said before, you know, my background was as a tanker, the M1A1 Abrams main battle tank. And when you're commanding that vehicle, you know, from where you sit as the tank commander, you have optics and you have controls that you can use the main gun. You can use the coaxial M240 machine gun. You have your commander's weapon system, which is the M2 50 caliber heavy machine gun. But you can't drive the tank, right? You can't be loading and firing at the same time. You have a whole system that's integrated in there. And, you know, the VA loan, you know, maybe we say the VA loan is like your main gun. But there's other things you gotta know. And even before you get to the weapon systems, you gotta know how to drive it. You gotta know how to maintain it. You gotta know where to add the fuel, you know, where to add the different sort of like hydraulic fluid and other lubricants and just maintain the vehicle and drive it around, right? So that's the whole world of real estate transactions, like that whole big vehicle, the whole tank, and the VA loan is just the main gun. So today we're going to talk about the whole system, all right? And this is, you know, we all nerd out on different things. One of the reasons why I like real estate is because it includes history, and like understanding history is super important, not just for like appreciating what you're doing and getting into, but for actually like doing it well, is history. And so, you know, it's personal finance, it's investing, it's history, it's economics, it's a really cool thing to get into. And, so that's why I'm excited to do it. Now, before we jump into today's first episode, first, you know, call it a lecture if you want. But today's podcast on the basics or the fundamentals of real estate, we'll just take a moment to, again, encourage you to head over to our website, www.militarywealthcoach.com. You can opt into our weekly newsletter, which will come out on Mondays. And then that makes it easy so you don't have to check in on Wednesdays for new blog posts or check in Sunday nights or Monday mornings to see what the podcast is about. Or, you know, we include some good money tips, budgeting and saving and investing tips each week. And you can also sign up, you know, I think it's really cool. It's a lot of fun for me when somebody signs up, and it's for a free coaching session. You know, we'll take about like 40, 50 minutes. on Zoom or Google Meets. For some reason, Zoom is always buggy for me. So I like Google Meets, but we can do it all. We can do WhatsApp. And just talk about like your questions and your interests in the world of personal finance and military pay and military benefits and retirement planning and all that. And, you know, gives me the chance to hear from you as a community, find out what you're thinking about, what challenges you're facing, and maybe provide some, you know, support or some answers. And, you know, we may even find that we work good together in the long haul and we want to, you know, meet more regularly and just kind of help develop your strategy and your investment portfolio together. And, you know, also on there, you can find our links to our social accounts. And probably the best is, you know, if you just search for Military Wealth Coach on like LinkedIn, Facebook or Instagram, like those are probably the best. The handle on Instagram is MWC112358. And then you can follow us there and send us a DM on any of those platforms with any of your questions. And the other part, obviously, that we want to knock out here before we get started is just to, again, highlight that the content of this show is educational in nature. We're here to help you build your financial IQ and your financial confidence. Nothing that we say should be misinterpreted as legal, tax, or financial advice. And as always, do your own research, make your own decisions, and then own the consequences of your decisions. If you aren't confident in what you're going to do, be sure to reach out and hire a professional. All right. So with that, we're going to get into it today, housing. Okay. And this is what, you know, it's hard to do in a podcast. It's a lot easier to do in a book. Maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm just more comfortable writing. You know, and that's one of the reasons why I do the podcast is because I'm not very comfortable with it, but hopefully we get better over time. But the thing that I like to start out with is this challenge, right? If you can throw something out there that challenges what people believe, it tends to get people their ears to perk up. And in this topic in particular, I think the best way to do it to get people to like really cue in, because I already said like, I'm not going to tell you about the VA loan today. You might be like, well, that's all I care about, is to just say something that might challenge what you believe. And what I want to say is that when we talk about home buying, we're not talking about buying a house at all, right? Like we are totally preoccupied on like, I'm going to use a VA loan to go out and buy a house and then I'm going to be a homeowner. You're not actually buying the house, except in a very few locations. Like here in England, it's true. In the state of Hawaii, it's true. There's some other places where you can just buy the house in what's called a fee simple arrangement as opposed to a land contract. But pretty much in the other 49 states, as far as I know, I haven't done the research on all of them, but like pretty much the world over, when you say you're going to go out and buy a house, you're not actually going out to buy a house. You're going out to buy land. You're buying land that just happens to have a structure on it, right? That somebody built at some time. But the land's been there forever. And that is what you're buying in a real estate transaction. I mean, that's crazy, right? But that's legally, that's where it all starts. And that's where we want to start talking about it, is because if you try to go from the outside in, like start with the walls, you're looking at this 2,200 square foot new build from KD Homes that's, you know, an exurb like 30 miles from Fort Meade, and it's really nice, and it's got all this like slightly shiny, not quite highest end, but still like slightly better than builder grade, you know, finishes and integration with like Alexa and all that stuff. And you're like, whoa, this is amazing. Well, all that stuff is going to rot and fall down someday. And half of it's just for looks and is nothing structural, right? It's all just stuff that's been slapped on there to add value to the land. It all starts with the land. And it's really hard to understand why it will take you 30 to 45 days to purchase this house if you just sit there and look at the house and you look at your bank account and you look at the house and you look at your bank account and you're like, I have the money for the house. The house is there for sale. My real estate agent and your agent said, let's buy and sell this house. And everybody agreed. And we signed a paper. Like, what is taking so long? And then you get frustrated and you get stressed. And you're like, why? What is happening? I don't understand the process. I don't understand the system. I don't understand the laws. I don't understand what is going on. I don't understand why they're talking to me about all these different people being involved and telling me about title insurance and inspections and appraisals and, right? But if we start with the land and we build out, we start to understand all these things. And once we have the understanding of the what is the foundation and all of the different layers and levels that go on top of it, not only can we start to understand why certain things take certain amounts of time, but we can also start to bend those timelines. Here's an example of what I mean by that. If you're going into a new market, now this can either be because you're PCSing out to like do an independent duty station, maybe you're going out to do recruiting, and you know, when you go out to do that, you're going all over the place, places that are aware of the military, but they may not have a base or a large military community there. Or maybe you're just getting out after 4 years and you're ready to use the VA loan now as a veteran instead of active duty. And you go back home. And back home, you know, people love, they support the troops, they are proud of you, but like there's not a military community. And as such, there's the real estate agents, the brokers, the loan officers at the banks. None of these people are familiar with the process. Right? And then you start trying to bid on a house and you start losing bids. And you hear back the agents like, hey, look, the seller, they had the exact same offer from you with a VA loan and somebody else with a conventional loan. And they went with the conventional loan because they know it better. They're worried that the VA loan is going to take too long to close. And you will hear that from day one that you start using the VA loan, right? From everybody. They'll be like, ah, well, you know, it's going to be tricky because it takes longer to close. Have you ever stopped and asked why, if you've been through that situation? And if you haven't been through this situation, imagine if you have the power of knowing why that belief is out there. And what I'm telling you is the belief is out there because what happens is these inexperienced agents and brokers from both sellers and buyers, they don't understand that the VA requires an appraisal from a VA-certified appraiser. And so you'll go out there and you'll start this home buying process and it can go in a nice, smooth 30-day timeline. They'll schedule the appraiser. He'll come out 2 weeks after you sign the contract. You know, she'll finish her appraisal, upload it, send it over to the bank. The bank's like, this looks great. And then they send it to the VA and the VA's like, this is not a VA-certified appraisal. Do it again. Well, you just lost 2 weeks and now it's going to be a 45-day close, right? Understanding this, knowledge is power. Because now, not only do you know that that's a reality, but that in and of itself, VA loans do not take longer than conventional loans, so long as you do it right. When you sit down, you can talk to your agent the first time you sit down to be like, hey, do you have a VA certified appraiser who you use, and we can get out there within 10 days of contract signing? And if they're like, I'm sure I can find someone, you can be like, well, I'm sure I can find a new agent. Or the same with a loan officer, right? Loan officers are usually way overconfident that they know what they're doing because that's all they do. They don't talk to people. They just look at spreadsheets and they think they know their system and they got everything worked out, but they might not be very familiar. So once again, you have the knowledge and the power to talk to these people. And I say it not just from understanding the system, but from having made that mistake once ourselves, right? And so we learned the hard way. And just as so much we do here with the Military Wealth Coach, we're going to push out information that helps you get a head start on your journey, whether it's to debt elimination and financial stability, to becoming a homeowner, to becoming financially independent, like whatever, you know, level you're at now and however far you want to take your personal financial journey. For the most part, you know, like I said, I'm in my mid-40s. I've got a master's in economics and finance, and I've worked in finance in New York, and I've taught economics and finance at the university level. And that means I can say pretty confidently, not like with 100%, you know, being true, but like I would say probably like 99% confidence that like I'm out in front of the bow wave on you and your financial journey. And I've got a lot of street smarts and book smarts and you know, like making mistakes that I'm trying to like throw back to you as you're coming along, so you don't make those same mistakes that we did. And some of those mistakes can set you back 1, 3, 5, 8, 10 years in your financial journey. And so, like I said, it's the point is to help you build your financial education, your financial confidence, and get a jump start on your goals. All right, so. So what do I mean? Why am I telling you that buying a house is not about a house, it's about the land? Well, this is kind of where the history comes in, right? And so the earth doesn't, if you look down on the ground, right? If you're, you know, when you go home tonight, whether it's your house or a rental, you know, if you look down on the ground between you and your next door neighbor, the grass might be a different length. There might be a fence there. There could be like a shrub or something like that. There might be a utility pole. There could even, you know, there might even be some stakes with like flags on them, right? Especially if you're in a new build neighborhood, there's little stakes with flags marking off all the lots. Well, the earth, those are not natural features of the earth. Those are things that were tied to land ownership, private ownership of the land. And that's not a universal thing. But private ownership of the land was started approximately 5,000 years ago, back in Mesopotamia, which today we call Iraq. But from our history here in the West, it's about a 1,000-year-old practice. Now, if any of you know anything about like English history, this might ring a bell. The Norman Conquest. Are you familiar with that? The Norman Conquest, William the Conqueror. Came over in 1066. The English army had just, they had gone north to Stamford Bridge, where they defeated an invading Viking army. Finally, like that was the final battle in the Viking saga for the English, and they were feeling triumphant. And at the same time, the Normans, who are actually descendants of the Vikings living in France, they invaded the south of England. And so the English army marched all the way south and they met them at the Battle of Hastings. And well, as you can expect, after marching, you know, like 200 miles in like 3 days after fighting the Vikings, they lost. And William the Conqueror conquered England. And what he did right away was he, in order to consolidate power, all of the nobles in England who had land, they owed him military service, right? Well, about 20 years later, somebody's like, you know, we don't really, like, we're rich, we have these big estates, we don't need to go off and die in these wars. Let's come up with private property rights. And so it took about another 100 years, but in right around the early 1200s, property rights were established. And so you might have heard the Magna Carta, that really reinforced it. But basically, let's just throw a dart against the timeline and say, like, from the year 1200 in England, to own property, you had to have a deed. And the deed said you owned the land. And you could do whatever you wanted on top of that land, right? And it started out with the rich people. That way they had ownership. They didn't have to go to war in order to keep ownership of their land. They just got to keep it because they had a paper that said, you own this. This is your deed. And it became common law. Well, who were the first, European colonists of the American colonies? They're English, right? And so they brought with them English common law and the deed. And as soon as they got here, they started making maps of the American colonies and they started drawing borders and lines and parcels and making these little squares and being like, okay, that's a parcel number one, that's parcel number two, parcel number three. And, you know, James Smith, he gets the deed to number one and Rob Smith gets the deed to number two and Sam Smith gets the deed to number three, right? They're all Smiths. I'm sure there's some other names in there, but that's how America started when it came to homeownership, was the English colonists coming over, dividing up the land, and establishing deeds. And then ever since then, right, in order to own that land, you have to have the deed. If you want to sell it, you have you have to sell it by transferring the deed to the new owner. If you built your little cabin on there, they don't necessarily want the cabin. Maybe they just want to buy the land, and then you agree to pay them rent to live in the cabin on the land, right? Because you needed cash for the land. Or maybe you sell the whole thing, right? So you can see that right at the heart of it, right at the foundation, real estate transactions in America are based on the little squares of land, the little parcels, they're called parcels, and the deed, the piece of paper that says you have legal ownership to it. So what does this mean when it comes to buying real estate? Well, before you get tempted to jump all the way in and make it as complicated as possible and say, okay, there's a buyer's agent, a seller's agent, and there's a lender down at the bank, and there's attorneys, and there's a buyer. Like, no. Like, at its very most simple bit, you have a piece of land, you have the owner with a deed, and somebody wants to come along and buy it. And all that needs to happen is the seller signs off saying, I give this deed of land to this buyer. And then there's an office. Every county in the United States, oh man, what is it? Is it like 6,200 counties in the United States? I can't remember exactly. It's a lot. Hold on. I actually just Googled it. How many counties are in the United States? Oh, I was way off. 3,144. Okay, I doubled it. All right. Well, we can't get it right every time. Okay, so there's 3,200 counties. Each one has a county recorder, right? It's usually like two or three people who have this office down at town hall. And they're responsible for all of the land records and all of the birth certificates and all the marriage certificates and all the death certificates and all that official stuff. And so now we have our buyer seller. The very next person in the most simplest way of doing a real estate transaction is not an agent or a lender or a broker or anything. It's the county recorder, right? And well, I should also say there's also a notary public, right? Because like I could forge your name and then hand it in and like take your land. But so you need a notary public, right? So let's say this is where every real estate transaction starts, is the owner of the land has a deed. They sign it over to you. A notary public notarizes it and says, this is a legal binding document. You take it to the county clerk. They record it. And now it's an official transaction. And you are now the legal owner of that land. It's simple. It's simple. You can do this. People do this every day. You can do this within 48 hours. Maybe even less if you know the person, right? If you know it and you have like, you know, probably it's probably a little bit fast because you do need to do some due diligence, which I'll mention here in a second. But its purest, simplest form, you can do a real estate transaction within a week. No problem whatsoever. It only gets complicated when you start to add things to it, like a lender or like a structure, like a house built upon it, right? And so let's talk about what happens. And this is now in this long list of people who are involved in real estate transactions, agents, brokers, lenders, attorneys, et cetera. This is now our first step in the complication, right? Because what we said is these deeds were established when the lines were first drawn. And if you're buying a house and you're out in Massachusetts, that land deed might have at least 250 years, if not 300 or more years of transaction histories, people buying and selling throughout the centuries, right? It's kind of fascinating. And so you have to make sure that the person who is selling you this land and signing the deed over to you did it correctly when they got it from the person before them. And ideally, you do it for two transactions before yours. And so you have to do what's called a title search or a title report. And all that is that's going into the records that the county recorder has and looking back over time. You usually don't want to do this. They might release, you know, stuff to you, but it's a lot easier to just pay a title company to do it. For like $100, $200, they'll do it. and they're going to give you this report. And you can see like, oh, yes, you know, Sam Smith, who's selling me this land, he bought it from Julia Smith and she bought it from Mary Smith. And when Mary Smith sold it, you know, she had a loan, but she paid it off. And there was no loan on Julia Smith's land and there's no loan on Sam Smith's land. So now I know if I buy this land, there's no problem, right? I don't have to worry about someone coming along and taking the land away from me. Now, why would you have to do that? Well, you've probably heard a lot of people say, either on sitcoms or movies, they're like, well, you know, yeah, I bought the house, but the bank owns it, right? Well, I got a mortgage, so it's not really my house. Well, none of that is true, right? Because the deed, as we've just explained, the deed establishes ownership. Having a mortgage on your house does not mean you don't own it. You own the land. You own the everything on the land. It's the mortgage that can create problems because that's the bank saying, if you stop paying us on this loan, we're going to take the house from you. And then we're going to sell it so we can get our money back, right? And so these, when we talk about running a title report, what we're doing, they're also called O&E reports, which is like ownership and encumbrance. And you're just validating that what you find on the deed is correct and that there's no mortgages, there's no liens. A good example, you know, that I have recently is we purchased some land sort of like just near a ski resort, and with the idea of not of, you know, using it for ourselves, but of essentially like a value added, you know, buy it cheaply and then sell it to somebody from the city, you know, who really wants some land in the mountains. And we ran the O&E report, and, you know, we found that the person selling it to us, it was free and clear, right? Like, they don't have any mortgages or liens or tax. They didn't owe any taxes. Like, everything was free and clear. The person they bought it from, everything free and clear. But like I said, you want to try to go two transactions back before yours, which is essentially three owners. Well, we found that the people who had it before them had owned a company, and that company had been sued by the federal government, and they couldn't pay the penalty. And so the federal government put a lien on that land that said basically, like, you know, if you don't pay this off in an installment plan, we're going to come take the land, right? And we're like, oh no, this is what's called an encumbrance. Right. Again, there's no house involved, nothing yet. It's just the land. Well, fortunately, it was so old that it was past the what's called a statute of limitations. So like the law no longer could hold that accountable, and it was no good, right? But you can only imagine how heartbreaking it would be if you know, moved back home to Nevada and went out and you bought a house in like a slightly older, you know, like a maybe like, let's call it like a 40-year-old house, something that was built like right around 1990, late 80s. And, you know, or better yet, you move home to Florida, right? And you do that and you buy this house and it seems all in the up and up. But it turns out that from like 2008, when the housing market burst, that it had been owned by like a bartender who had been able to buy seven houses with like the really bad loans that were being written back then. And there was a lien against it, right? A judgment. And you could potentially lose the land and lose the house that you're buying because of this thing that happened, you know, 16, 17 years ago. So you always want to check on that. But once it passes through that process, like the ownership changes hands. You don't need anything else. And if you have if you're able to do a cash payment for it, then you don't need a bank. You don't need agents, right? Like agents are just people who facilitate. You don't need them. They're not required. They can be useful, especially your first few times. But you don't need any of that. At the very start of a real estate transaction, cash, buyer, seller, notary, run a title report, and then record it. And it's done. And you're the owner, right? Nothing to worry about. So we've covered the basics of where the ownership is established. It's the deed for the land and the fact that you have to run these title reports or O&E reports to make sure that the land can be passed to you free and clear. So you don't inherit somebody else's back paid taxes, legal judgments, mortgages that they didn't pay, anything like that. All right. So that's a big part of it. And that also is something when you do get into purchasing real estate, you'll start to see things like title insurance. And title insurance is basically like, because you can only research back so far, sometimes only one or two owners, not all the way to like 1682, right? If you purchase title insurance, then if all of a sudden, you know, Julie and Jim Johnson, you know, whose great-great-great-great grandparents came over on the Mayflower with the Smiths, and like they had a judgment on the Smith's land that you just bought, and they like suddenly discover it 200 years later, you know, and you missed it in your O&E report, like it's not game over for you because you have title insurance and it can take care of it and protect you, right? So that's all tied to the ownership of the land and the deed and like the legal chain, all right? And that's, once you get through that, you're good, you're golden, right? And now you have sort of the second part is that when you buy the land, you get what's on top of it. And that's what we focus on. We don't focus on the land. We think the lot comes with it, like, oh, this is a beautiful house on a quarter acre. No, the quarter acre is the foundation. Somebody built a beautiful house on it. And now this is where it gets complicated. And now this is why it can take so long to buy properties, to buy your first house, to buy real estate properties, right? Or sorry, rental real estate properties. Because when people start building houses, things get complicated. Things go wrong, right? You've got to lay the foundation. You've got to build the frame in the house, the structure. You've got to put a roof on it. You've got to put windows in it. You've got to put plumbing in it. You've got to put wiring in it. This all has to be to code. The codes get updated every several years. And so once you build this house, you've got to inspect it, right? So I know I can buy the land and there's no encumbrance, there's no lien, there's no tax judgment, there's no back taxes, there's nothing bad that way. But maybe this house is just a POS, right? If it's old enough, it might be falling apart. It's probably definitely not up to code in certain areas. And you need to find out about that. So you need to have an inspector come out and inspect this building. And they're going to tell you the condition, right? Because you can look at, you know, they say like lipstick on a pig. I can take a structure that's worth $50,000 and I can put granite countertops and like stainless steel appliances in the kitchen. And now somebody's going to think it's worth $150,000 because they're like oohing and aahing over the pictures on Zillow. And they're like, oh my God, it's my dream kitchen. Right. And it's like, that still didn't fix the plumbing or the wiring and the foundation. Like the slab is cracked, you know, like there's a flooding risk in the basement, all that kind of stuff. And so when you're going out to buy a house, it's really important to inspect it and make sure that it's everything that you hope it will be. Because otherwise, imagine this, you agree, and this is really bad that happened in COVID, like mid-20 through like early 22, I would say even mid-22, like this was still a major problem where all buyers were quote unquote waiving contingencies. They were so desperate to buy a house that they would tell the seller, like, I'm not going to inspect it. Just give it to me as is, right? And so they might pay $400,000 for a house. And then once they own it and they move in, they find out that they need to spend $20,000 on a new heating and cooling system, and they need to spend $15,000 to replace the roof. They need to spend $5,000 to get a new water heater. And, you know, there's a crack in the slab of the basement that's going to, you know, be like a $20,000 repair. So when you look at all of those things that they miss by not inspecting the quality and the condition of the structure, they really are spending like $500,000 for a $400,000 house. And you don't want to do that, right? It's obviously a bad deal. Now, where this relates to the VA loan, and we'll talk more about it in episode 2 of this series on the VA loan, is that the VA loan is a guarantor, which means that they're going to promise the bank that you're getting the loan from to pay back 25% of the value so that the bank can get all its money back. That's why you don't have to make a down payment. Well, they're not going to want to do that if there's all of these problems, right? Because if you stop paying, you know, whether it's the bank or the VA or anybody, if the house is worth a lot less than they think it is because of all these things that are broken or not up to code, they're gonna end up losing money on the deal too. So the inspection becomes a very important part of you making sure that what you're buying is as advertised, right? Like there's nothing hidden. The seller's not trying to lie to you. But also to reassure the banks and the guarantors of your loan to buy the house that there's no nightmare scenario coming up. Now, inspectors are usually pretty responsive. I would say on average, it's probably on average, like we've always been able to get an inspector in within a week. And like, I feel like 4 to 5 days has been on average. And depending on, you know, if you're working with agents who are well connected, you can get an inspector in there like within 2 or 3 days, you know. So inspectors should never hold you up, but you should always get an inspector. And you'll have to pay, you know, $300, $400, $600, $800 depending on where you are and what kind of property it is. But they're going to give you a really valuable report. And this is also, you know, when you're negotiating the sales price, you're not going to have an inspector come in until you sign an initial sales contract. But you don't want to, waive your inspection, and you also don't want to waive the right to renegotiate. So you would have an inspection period. And that's that way what the inspection period does is it says like, okay, you've got 10 days of inspection period from the signing of this contract. You get that inspector in on day 5. They give you the report on day 5. You sit down and look at it on day 6 and you realize there's a lot of work to do. You can come back through your agent to the seller and be like, hey, look, this house needs a new roof and a new water heater. I want you to take $25,000 off the sales price, or I want you to give me a $25,000 credit at closing. I'll give you the sales price, but I want cash back to pay for these repairs at closing. That would be the smarter way to do it, honestly, instead of taking off the sales price. You know, because if you take it off the sales price, it's just lowering the amount you're going to loan. Get a loan, like you just borrow $375 instead of $400, but if they give you cash back, you can still borrow $400. They give you $25,000 in cash, and now you can actually pay for the repairs because you have the cash in hand, right? And they still walk away with $375 in both situations. But, you know, so anyway, the inspectors is what makes the gives you the confidence and the lender the confidence that the structure built on the land is going to be, you know, in good condition and you're not paying too much. And then you've got the third bit, which is the appraisal. And you might have heard of that before. An appraiser is somebody who looks at this house that you want to buy and they compare it to similar houses nearby. And they come up with like what the house is worth. And usually what they do is they say like, okay, house A sold for $200,000, house B sold for $250,000, house C sold for $225,000. That makes the average price of a house in this neighborhood $225,000 because they're all the same size. They're all 3-bed, 2-bath, right? And then they're going to look in there and they're going to tell you the pluses and minuses, right? And so maybe the one that sold for $200,000 had like it was just a house. Like there was no garage, there was no deck. The one that sold for $225,000 like had a garage and a deck, and the one that sold for $250,000 had a garage and a deck, and it had all updated appliances, updated counters, updated flooring, new thermal, you know, energy efficient windows, new appliances like as in the HVAC and the water heater. So now you know when you're looking at it that you when you go to buy a 3.2, you know that on average it should cost $225,000, and for $225,000 you should be getting a 3-bed, 2-bath that has a garage and a deck. And if you're going to go and spend money to get a super high-end, like, new build that's got all the shiny stuff, like stainless steel, refrigerator and granite counters, that it's going to cost around $250,000. And so that way, when, you know, that appraisal really helps you, because now you can look at your contracted price and what you're getting and say, oh, I signed a contract to buy this house for $250,000, but it doesn't have a deck, and it doesn't have new windows, and it doesn't have new heating and a new water heater, and it doesn't have a garage. I think this house is probably only worth like $220,000. I'm like way overpaying. And you can cancel the contract and back out, or you can renegotiate the price. So the appraisal is what lets you know that for all this stuff that's been built on top of the land, what it should be worth. That helps you directly because you can decide if that's what you want to pay. But it also can be a showstopper. And this is like, you know, when it comes to the inspection, well, I should say when it comes to the O&E report, right? Like, does the seller have back taxes, judgments and stuff? You can negotiate that away if they refuse to negotiate it away and pay off their taxes or pay off their mortgage or get the judgment cleared. Then you have the power to say, I am not going to buy this property. If the inspector comes back and he's like, hey, look, you know, bad foundation, out-of-date electrical, you can say, I have the power in my inspection period to cancel this contract and not buy the house and go find something else. With the appraiser, all of these things can come back and you can still be happy. But now this is sort of where your palms get sweaty, because this is where the power can go out of your hands. The bank can refuse to lend you based on the appraised value. And that's where a lot of people get really sad, because they're, especially over the past 4 years, people have been willing to pay more than a property's worth because they've been so desperate to get a house, and because the average first-time home buyer loves things like stainless steel range, stainless steel dishwasher, nice countertops, painted cabinets, like all this stuff that doesn't add a ton of value compared to like square footage or extra bathrooms or things like that, finished basements. So they're willing to overpay, and they're bidding too much. They're bidding like, you know, $250 on something that's listed for $245, but it's actually only worth $240. And so guess what? The bank, they don't want to lend you to buy $250,000 a house that's only $240. Because if you stop paying and they have to take the house back, they're going to lose $10,000. And it's the same with the VA. Because as we said, the VA acts as a guarantee, promising to pay the bank 25% of the loan amount if you stop paying. And, you know, they do that because, like, you could go to war and die, right? And so they don't want, that to be a hang-up on the bank to lending to people in uniform. And then also, you know, as a reward for your service, they want to help make it easier to buy a home. Well, that means that the VA really cares a lot that the appraised value is what you're paying. And so if you are, you know, and this is why it can be really heartbreaking for a military family that's trying to do a zero down VA loan purchase, is that, you know, let's say you are under contract to buy a house for $215,000. Because it's got some nice, you know, new paint and new cabinets, and the VA appraiser goes out and says, this house is worth $200,000. Well, they're going to tell the bank that the bank can lend you $200,000, and the VA will approve it, and that's all well and good. But now you've gone from a zero down purchase to having to come up with $15,000 to cover the gap between your contract price and the actual appraised value. So all that's to say that this is a multi-layered process, right? Oftentimes you get mad at your agents. Maybe you get mad at the loan officer over at the bank who's like holding up your loan or asking for more documents or more proof and all that kind of stuff. But it may not be anything to do with that. It may be all these layers beneath it, which is, you know, is the land worth what it's worth? Are there back taxes that have to be taken care of? Are there mortgages or judgments from previous owners that need to be taken care of? Is the building that was put on top of it, is it falling apart? Or is it the value that you think it is and the seller thinks it is? And how does it compare to the value of similar houses in the neighborhood? And all those things have to line up, right? And so it starts with the land, comes to the house, comes to the finishes in the house. It goes from the ground up, not from the rooftop down. And you got to understand that. And when you piece it together from a timeline standpoint, again, at the basic, most basic time, probably within 1 week, that's probably, I'm sure people have done land transactions faster. But if you're buying land with nothing built on it with cash, if you can get a title report in 24 hours, you know, you can sign a contract on Monday, transfer the deed on Tuesday, and by Wednesday, you can be the legal owner of that land, right? It can go that fast. But it can also drag out. It can drag all the way out. And the reason why 30 days is a pretty typical timeline for close is that it gives you the time to do the inspection. It gives you the time to do the appraisal. It gives the banks the time to collect all your paperwork, do your background check, make sure that you're able to pay the loan. It gives the VA time to jump in there and review everything and make sure they're willing to guarantee your purchase. And it can start stretching out beyond 30 days for any problems that come up. A non-VA certified inspector is used. The inspection reveals a problem that the owner wants to fix themselves. Maybe the appraisal comes back and it's not the number you're hoping for, so now you got to go renegotiate and you got to change the final date of the sale, right? And so when you start to understand like all these levels and what who these people are and what they do going through it, you can start to be proactive. And you know, obviously you learn that in the military to be proactive, but you know, before you even get into the process of making an offer and looking at houses, you've got to take all this knowledge you have and you have to interview your team. So if you're going to go on Zillow, you're like, wow, I love this house. Fill out this form so an agent contacts. I mean, the agent contacts you like, hey, what are you looking for? Like, tell me your budget. Like, let's see what we can get you into, right? Like, that's the time to influence all this where you say, hey, look, I'm active duty military. I'm going to be using the VA loan. I'm willing to put up to 5% down if I need to, or 5% to cover an appraisal gap. I'm only going to pay $2,000 a month, combined PITI for my mortgage payment. So don't try to like stretch me from there. I only want a $250,000 house. Do not try to sell me a $300,000, even though my paycheck says I can afford it. Also, I need you to share with me your contact of your lender who's friendly with VA loans and your VA certified appraiser who's going to work with us. And I want you to tell me how long it takes you to get an inspector out there. You run the show. Don't let the agent run the show on you, right? The agent's got 20 other people just like you, and they're just trying to make everybody happy so they can get their commission. I'm not saying they're misleading you or being deceitful, just that you're not their priority. If you were their only client, sure, they would prioritize you, but you're not. You have to run the show, and you have to take control, just like you're going to take control with your finances through budgeting, smart saving, retirement planning and investing. You got to take control of your home buying process. And that comes from lining up and getting the facts and the game plan ready before you even make an offer so that your agent already knows what you expect. And when you make that offer and you get a signed contract, you're going to get a text from the agent being like, hey, inspection is scheduled for Thursday. We've got the appraisal coming out next Friday. Is that work for you? You'd be like, yep. Right. And now you're in control and you're in the driver's seat. So what we're going to do is we're going to wrap it up. I think we've spent a good hour kind of introing and like going through the details here. And then next week, we're going to come back. It'll be the weekend before Thanksgiving. And what we'll do is we'll talk about a little bit more about like how to like look at a house and how we'll talk about we'll talk about financing and the VA loan and conventional loans and cash and like compare all that. That'll be our next week's topic. And then the third week in this series, we'll come back and we'll talk about how to actually do your own homework and how to like what to look for and how to evaluate real estate and what it's worth and what kind of things you should do, because you can do a lot of this stuff on your own just through like Zillow or Redfin. You don't even really need an agent to do your, you know, you can do your own appraisals. It won't be official for a bank, but you can do your appraisals ahead of time and make better, stronger offers from the start, if you know that. And then what we'll do is we'll come back and we'll talk about essentially like a service member strategy for using the VA loan and other sources of financing to over the course of whether it's, you know, your first 5 years in uniform, a 20-year career, or 60 years of life, how you can just constantly reuse these weapons and these tools with the VA loan to massively build out your real estate portfolio and create life-changing wealth through real estate. So hopefully everybody listening this week took something away and learned something, even if it was some nerdy history about the history of deeds and land contracts, or maybe even, you know, England's existential crisis in the 11th century. or at the very least, you've come away knowing like, oh, you know what? The first time we bought a house, my partner and I, it was so hard to get an offer accepted. We kept losing to these conventional offers, and it took us like 40 days to close, and we had to stay in a hotel an extra week, and it was expensive and super frustrating. Hopefully now you learned like a couple of the areas where you can be more proactive and take control of the process and speed things up and make it less stressful for you next time that you go out and buy a house. So, and you know what? I think we're going to have a bonus episode that we throw in there at some point where we're going to talk about the housing market in America in general. Because what I would say is we're still, you know, even if you're young and you're 20 years old and you're thinking already about buying a house, you probably have parents or you have senior mentors at your unit who were homeowners in the mid to late 2000s. So I'm talking like 2004 through 2009, who may have lost hundreds of thousands of dollars, having bought a house that was too high, and then in the housing crash, having to sell it, being forced to sell it, even if they didn't want to. And so what I also owe you is an episode on the history of the housing market over the last 20 years. And I'm going to convince you that we'll never see that happen again. And that'll be important for adding to your confidence going forward. All right, before we run out of tape, whatever that means, thanks again for tuning in. Enjoy fall. If you're a week or two behind on the podcast, enjoy your Thanksgiving. Like I said, we're still going to come out with another episode before the holiday. But if you don't get to it until then, hope you had a good Thanksgiving. And until next time, stay financially fit and mission ready.